Hello, and welcome to Book Reviews Kill, a podcast about fantasy, sci-fi, and horror novels. I'm Evan.
And I'm Chad.
And you're joining us today for our recap and discussion of Heir of Fire, book three in the Throne of Glass series by Sarah J. Maas. This book rocked. I loved Manon, I loved Dorian, I loved Rowan. Even after three books of me not being super excited about her, I have very much come around to Selena. There was a ton of action here, fantastic scenes and sequences. The ending was outstanding. What a fun and engaging and expansive entry in this series. I'm on board for Throne of Glass now.
Dude, fully on board, like, and yeah, stoked about it. Like, Selena's, you nailed it when you said expansive, because we really needed some growth from certain characters, Selena, and and some movement there, and we got it. And then we had some really cool introduction to different characters. The world was, I really, really enjoyed this book. Definitely my favorite by a long shot. Before we continue, are we going to continue calling her Selena or Aelin? Because you kind of owns it at the end of this. Yeah. Like, it ends with a really cool, I'm going to begin this podcast by quoting the final line of the book. Yeah. And it is,
she was Aelin Ashriver Galathinius, and she would not be afraid.
God,
I loved
so
that. That gave
good.
Me chills, man.
Me too.
Yeah. Like, I was, yeah, I really liked that.
It's so beautiful and clever, and I'll tell you why. Because it
tell me why.
Because she's accepting herself, like, fully, you know, and being like, no, I'm not going to run from my past anymore.
That's what the whole book was about.
Yeah, yeah. But also, she's honoring Sam and his memory because his thing was like, I am Sam, whatever. And like, I will, you know, that was like his thing, to remind himself who he was by saying his name to himself. And so it was like a really cool, like, honoring of the past while accepting what has happened and moving forward with like a healthy view on things, and like the tattoos, just great.
Oh yeah. No, I mean, I thought all of that worked really well. I mean, seriously, like, I can't stress enough like how excited I am for the rest of this series now. The first three books, I mean, I made a TikTok video a little bit ago where I was very honest about my opinion. Some people got mad at me, but like, some, I was very, very honest about my opinion about these first three books. I thought they were kind of clunky, kind of clumsy, pretty interesting sometimes, but kind of a chore to get through at others. This book, though, and actually, let me just throw this out again. Sarah J. Maas was very young when she wrote those books, so I'm not saying they're terrible. I'm not saying she should have never started writing.
But it's obvious. She's young.
Don't clip me. Like, but yeah, she was very young when she was writing these. But man, I wasn't really bored or over it. There was like a few chapters where like a kind of a dip in my interest level for a little bit when Adian and Kael and Ren and Murtagh were doing like sleuth solving, you know, they were just kind of like, what is all of where, what, there's like a triangle and stuff. I felt like that part was just definitely a little bit long, but the Manon stuff, oh my God, that was super, super exciting. I loved every single Manon chapter. Like when I turned the page and it was Manon, I was like, yes, we go. Like there's more of this.
Yep.
Selena's stuff was pretty cool. We can get into it more and talk more about it. I really liked Rowan a lot. I think Rowan is a fantastic addition to this story, and I really hope that he doesn't die horribly like a character did at the end of
that. Got me.
Please.
Okay, wait, we should hit the recap before we get deep.
let's do the recap. Go ahead.
Let's do it.
Selena Sardothian has been drinking, gambling, and fighting since arriving in Wendolyn. She has lost any momentum she had upon arriving and lies drunk in the sun. A fae named Rowan Whitethorn finds her and brings her to Queen Maeve. Selena is enthused about this meeting, as Maeve is one of the few who can answer Selena's questions about the word keys. Maeve agrees to give Selena the answers she seeks, but first wishes to see what has become of Selena's fire magic, the great and uncontrollable power that left her when the King of Aedirlin banned magic in Aurelia. Selena is forbidden to travel to Doranel for the answers she desires until she has trained with Rowan at a fortress called Mistward, and Rowan decides she has remastered her gifts. The lessons with Rowan are grueling, testing Selena's physical strength and mental fortitude. Rowan is harsh and brutal, berating her and demanding of her dormant powers a level of control she has yet to attain. He continually asks her to shift into her fey form, and then to summon her fire magic, which she is unable to control when she can even bring it forth. She works hard trying to call her abilities in any way he requests, but is met with little success and her frustration grows. In Aedirlin, Adion Ashriver, a Terrasen general related to Selena and ostensibly loyal to the king, has arrived back from battle. When Kael Westfall learns that Adion is secretly loyal to Terrasen, Kael tells him that Selena, Aelin, is still alive. These two, along with Murtagh Alsbrook and his grandson Ren Alsbrook, begin working together. Murtagh thinks he's figured out how the king did away with magic. He thinks it's a triangulated spell between the towers in Rifthold, the Frozen Wastes, and the deserted peninsula. Kale and Dorian Havillard think this knowledge can be used to free magic once again, but are unsure of the effects this process may have on previous magic users. Murtagh discovers that the king is manufacturing monsters on a deserted island to launch a surprise attack on Wendolin. Meanwhile, Dorian is exploring his powers with the help of Sorsha, a royal nurse with whom he is quickly falling in love. As their feelings for each other develop, they find a way to help Dorian control his magic by increasing his intake of iron, a known deterrent to his type of powers. While all of this is happening, we're introduced to three witch clans, Yellow Legs, Blackbeak, and Blueblood. They are bitter rivals and have come together in secret service to the King of Adirlin to form a cadre of wyvern riders. They are each allowed to pick one wyvern to train and form a mental bond with. Manon Blackbeak, leader of an elite group of Blackbeaks called the 13, chooses an unlikely mount named Abraxos, a small but cunning creature. Abraxos is difficult to train and reluctant to cross the testing grounds that would prove them a formidable duo to their rivals. After stealing some precious spider silk for Abraxos' wings, they pass their test and enter into the war games that will decide the rider's leader. At first, Manon doesn't seem to have a conscience at all, but in the final battle, she saves one of her rivals and emerges as the wing leader of the Wyvern battle group. After a long while, Selena's training begins to pay off. She can voluntarily change back and forth between her human and fey forms. She can also summon her fire magic at will and in a controlled state. Also, a strong bond is beginning to form between her and Rowan. It appears to be platonic, as Kale is still on Selena's mind often, and Rowan is still mourning his wife, Lyria, who was killed over 200 years ago. Selena and Rowan have also been investigating the strange, brutal murders of demi-fae going on in their area. They discover the murderers are creatures from another world called the Volg, a demon race who forged the word keys long ago. Rowan and Selena know the Valg soldiers to be headed to their fortress home soon. They start assembling the civilians there to fight, but the attack happens sooner and stealthier than anticipated. Selena saves them by switching to her fey form and calling on the strongest ever display of her magic. When her strength is about to fail her, Rowan joins her as Karanam. This restores her strength as she draws on his power through the link. After the battle, Rowan and Selena travel to Doranel to meet with Queen Maeve. Who holds up her end of the bargain? She tells Selena the word keys can't be destroyed, they can only be put back in the word gates. No one knows exactly how to do this. She says the king would possess incredible power if he had all three keys in his possession, and he likely already has two. The queen suspects Selena has figured out where the third key is and begins whipping Rowan when she won't share the secret. Selena shows her magic and threatens to set the city's residents on fire if Maeve doesn't stop the torture. The queen sees her formidable power and stops. Selena realizes that Maeve wanted the word keys for centuries, and that she betrayed those she loved to try to get them. Selena pulls out the ring she found from the man Maeve loved and betrayed so long ago. Selena uses this ring to bargain with Maeve, who agrees to release Rowan from his blood oath to her. Rowan then turns right around, immediately swearing an oath to Selena, and the two leave together. Murtagh arrives in Adirlin with the news that Aelin is alive and showed her true self in the battle in Wendolin. Everyone is excited about the news. He leaves to go to Terrasyn and let her people and other realms along the way know. The king is in an absolute rage about the news. Before Kael and Adion can help Dorian and Sorsha escape the city, the king summons Dorian, Sorsha, Kael, and Adion into his throne room to question them about a spy in their midst. Before Kael can give himself up, Adion tosses his fake ring to the floor and spits at the king's feet, saying that he is the traitor. They shackle him and drag him off to the dungeons. The king says he'll be executed soon, but not before he can be used as bait to lure Aelin into a vulnerable position. The king turns to Sorsha, knowing her to be the true traitor all along, and questions her about the letters she sent her friend with information about him. She admits it's true, but says she truly fell in love with Dorian. In a savage display, the king then has her executed in front of them. Her blood spraying about the room, Dorian, voice raw with emotion, screams and watches in horror as her head slowly comes to a stop, freed from her body. Dorian then freezes the room with his ice powers. The king is happy to witness his son's magic. Thanks to Dorian, Kael escapes. The king binds Dorian and places a black yoke on his neck. It appears he will now be under his father's control. Kael grabs Fleetfoot and makes a run for the secret passages to escape. He tells Mort, the door knocker, where he's going in case Selena shows up there. He makes it back to Ren, who vows to free Adian. Selena sets off on a ship to Aderlin to tie up loose ends with Kael for good, and then find her old master, Arabin Hamel, who she believes has the third word key. She wants to go alone. Rowan doesn't like it, but has to agree, as once in Aderlin he would be unable to transform. Selena plans on gathering a court and an army the likes of which the world has never seen, planning to stand and fight against the king. She says she will send for Rowan when the time is right. She has finally accepted who she is and who she was, ready to fight her way back to the throne in Terrasen. At peace with her past and now facing her future, she proudly says, "I am Aelin, Ashriver Gelathinius, and I will not be afraid."
Okay, so the recap did not cover what I'm just going to call my favorite part of the whole book. And it was a Manon chapter. Manon. I don't know how to pronounce her name.
I think Manon, that's how I said it.
I like Manon. I don't know why.
It sounds better, but Manon is, I'm lazier.
Sure. Okay, so Manon jumps off Abraxas to save Petra as Petra's wyvern is dying in midair.
Yeah.
Oh my God, that scene was so awesome. So that scene was really great. And then just another couple highlights here. The other scene with Manon where I was totally duped. I mean, like that one really big, like badass dragon, like waltzes out and he's just like, yeah, who wants me? Like, hell yeah.
His name was like Tyrannus or something.
It was Titus or something.
Titus. There we go. Yeah. Yeah.
And I was like, oh, this is the part where Manon gets Titus because of course. And then like the dragon they're using as bait to like piss off the, I'm saying dragon and wyvern here. Side note for everybody that's frustrated with me. I just use those words interchangeably. It's one of my great fantasy sins. Just let it go. I'm not going to change. I'm never going to change.
So. I mean, especially in this book. I think they're the same.
No, they're wyverns.
They're never mentioned as dragons.
No, they're wyverns.
Right?
Wyverns. Okay, so if we want to have this conversation, I'm so sorry. We're going to derail this conversation real quick. But like,
let's do it.
A wyvern is a two-legged lizard, flying lizard with where its wings are its arms.
Totally. Dragon has four.
Okay. Yeah, but also like it depends on the book, right? So if like a fantasy book says that it's four-legged lizard things or wyverns, then like I don't care, I'll call it that. But in this particular book, that is what they are. They don't have four legs, they have two legs and wings. So anyway,
I think that should be the way that it is.
You're right, everyone's right, I'm wrong, I'm never gonna change.
They're smaller.
So
wait, why are you, oh, because you use them interchangeably.
Yeah, it's one of my red flags. Anyway,
it's one of my red flags. Like, I don't know about this author, dude. He thinks dragons and wyverns are the same. Wyverns, in my mind, have always been weaker, too, you know?
I don't know if that's totally the case. I think what I really like about this book is that there seem to be a different, like a spectrum of strength for wyverns, you know? They're breeding these things. Like, there seems to be like this kind of, like, they haven't totally nailed it yet, almost. Like, they have to use these bait dragons to, like, piss off the bigger ones because they don't seem to, like, nail breeding them like every single time, you know what I mean? They don't have the process like totally figured out yet, which I thought was really interesting. But what was even more interesting was Manon choosing this like scrappy bait dragon instead, and I love that scene so much. So I think that was where, for me personally, the book really turned for me, and I was like, that was so awesome. Like, that was like easily my favorite scene so far until, you know, Manon. Well, okay, so I'm rambling here, but like the Manon chapters really were my favorite because there's also a chapter where Manon is like, man, Abraxas's wings just aren't cutting it. We're going to have to go get some spider silk.
Yeah.
And then that scene was already so cool. I was already so excited about it. But like this cheeky, amazing way that Mas wrapped up that chapter. She was like, we don't want to have her here for that long. So we're just going to have Abraxas knock these giant spiders off a cliff.
Yeah, no big deal.
That's the end of the chapter. I loved it. I thought it was brilliant because like there was a small part of me that was like, Okay, are we really going to deviate and have like a whole Manon hunting spiders thing? Because I'm down. I want to see it, but like also with so much else going on. But then Moss was just like, I don't want to do that either. So we're just going to have this wyvern knock them all off a cliff, and it's fine. I loved it. I thought it was great.
Yeah, yeah. It's like she like introduced him and was like, actually, fuck this. I'm like, okay. Something that I thought was a little weird was like Manon, that just like kind of made me like, what was Manon, who's like clearly super badass and like is shooting for wing leader here,
yeah,
like for
yeah.
sure, and she's gonna be it, but then she picks the one that has like shredded wings. Like, I'm pretty sure in order to be wing leader you have to have a dragon or a wyvern with wings that work, you know. It's like weird that she chose him. I get for the spirit, but it's like his wings don't really work, so you
yeah
know?
I think that she felt like a sort it of like out, connection to obviously. Him so it's funny that you mentioned
can they feel because I feel like they
no there's like a okay yeah
let's talk about that.
So it is kind of there's a lot going on with Menon and the 13 and the witches and stuff. I like all of it. I mean, because I think that what gets wrapped up pretty well is when they bring in that other, like the Cochran witch, I can't remember what the Kroken or whatever they're called.
The Kroken,
But they bring in the Kroken is like, we feel bad for you because you're all horrible. You know, like you all have like these hearts of ice and you're all propagandized too. And like,
lame secret though. We pity you, really?
I know.
Okay.
The secret,
the big reveal.
The answer to the riddle. Yeah. Is love. Sorry, that was low hanging fruit.
It was low hanging fruit. You're right though.
But anyway, what were we talking about? Oh yeah. So
sorry, Braxis being chosen.
Well, so like, I did think it was just kind of weird that like Manon was like, I don't have a heart. I'm so heartless. I'm so badass. But I will like literally I will risk my life to save my rival. But here's the thing. Okay, so that was like my knee-jerk thing where I was like, really? Are you really? You're going to have all your cake and eat all of it in one sitting, Moss? Like, you're going to do this again? Like, you're doing this again? But no, I thought about it more. And I think that the scene with the Kroken like really did a lot of heavy lifting for that like hesitation that I had with that. Because that there is that kind of scene where after... Manon just walks away when all these other witches just literally shred this woman to pieces after Manon slits
like
her
guzzling
throat.
Her blood, dude.
Yeah, like that was pretty weird for sure.
Beer bonging her. Yeah.
Oh my God. But like she does kind of sit there and she's like, oh, are we the baddies? Like, are we
the bad guys? Yeah, like, dude, obviously you left a blood orgy behind.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, she's been raised a certain way her entire life. She's been indoctrinated. I think it was pretty well done. Like, I mean, I really want to see more of Manon and Abraxas and stuff. And I liked the kind of system that they had where there was like a second and she kind of like gets all the punishment for like not protecting Manon. And then like Manon's grandmother is just like the worst, you know, just absolutely
yeah.
horrible. Like her and the king should get together because like she was just, it's like, dude, give her a break. But then that was kind of, you know, what the Kroken witch said, you know, basically was, yeah, you're all terrible. And it's because of the older ones that are teaching you to be terrible.
Totally. So it was like maybe a call out to her inner nature being like not fully corrupted, or at least
yeah,
being like actively corrupted.
Yeah.
She wasn't born that way sort of thing. Okay, I get that for sure.
I think
sure.
that's what we're going to start seeing. Yeah.
To kind of add on to what you were saying, I totally agree with all of that. And I think, I don't know, it caught me a little weird when she was rescuing her rival and her rival could like feel the like true love or whatever coming from between like dragon and something. And then after that, Petra, thank you. She doesn't show up for some meeting or something. And it's said that she's like wallowing. She's like heartsick, basically. And it's like, I thought we didn't feel emotions, but like, I guess we do because we're heartsick now.
Well, no, because they're like, they do with the wyverns, I guess.
Oh, maybe that actually makes sense because the wyverns feel. And so they have like dragon rider connection.
The way that I read it was like this kind of foreign, like new thing for Manon that like beings could feel in this particular way. Like it was like a new idea of hers. She was like, oh, wow, they're like really compassionate. So that was like the way that I was reading into it. At the same time, I think that maybe like the whole like heartless thing is like more of a figure of speech. Like they're still like people, you know, I think that it was like,
okay.
It's more of like they're like so hardened. But I don't think they're like unsullied.
They're just jaded as hell.
Yeah. I don't think that they're like literal robot witches. You know what I mean?
Okay. That makes more sense.
The language was a little confusing there sometimes because I was like, am I supposed to, are they like literally like just awful? Like,
Right. But then she's like hands free flying with the wind in her hair, being like, just around the river bend. She's like, I feel joy. What is this? I hate this. Okay. So before we move on, we are the 13 from now until darkness claims us. What a great line. And then her 13 are super amazing immediately at flying because surprise, surprise, they are great at everything. And it's like, super badass and important women who have perfect recall and flawless skin. First time for everything, Sarah J. Maas, I think. And you're like, okay, cool. We're like really at the cutting edge of progressive ideals. And then that is your water fountain, you filthy half-breeds. Ew, swing and a miss, you know?
Yeah, there's definitely...
So like, it's a little cringy sometimes.
Yeah, no, I think cringy is a pretty good word sometimes where it's just like, wow, like, oh my God. But I think it's, I mean, with this specific situation, I mean, I think that it is serving like a bigger kind of like, they're all being misled, they're indoctrinated. What was up though, and maybe this wasn't really like, maybe this wasn't answered, but what was up with like all the meat tasting bad? Like, did we get any kind of resolution to that? What was that all
no,
about?
I wondered myself if she was going to turn, because she tells the 13 to like stop eating the meat. And I was like, are they going to go like, oh, vegetarian now? Maybe like the vegetarian witches or something. Zombies. But she didn't really mention what they replace with the, and it's not just the meat. It's also the men of the region.
Totally. Back yeah.
The witches eat the men. Yeah. It's going to be really hard. Like, I think Manon will be like redeemed. I think she will end up being
I
on the side of good at the end of this tale.
I want to see some
but
more.
But yeah, she's got some work to do because like she's a cannibal witch right now.
She has to unlearn some stuff. I hope that her and Selena butt heads at some point. That'd be cool.
And fight.
Yeah, and then like maybe become friends or something. It'd be interesting.
I mean, I feel like all of Selena's good, best relationships start with her being super angry and on the and enemies kind of with the person, or at least fighting with the people that she ends up being close with at the end, you know, like Sam, Rowan.
Yeah, everybody. And, you know, let's kind of shift over to Selena and Rowan, actually, because, man, getting more of Selena's backstory here was excellent. I really liked it a lot. Man, she's just, what she's been through is just like horrible. It's so bad. Like, seeing from her perspective, kind of like, the confusion of that night of her parents dying. And like, it wasn't just her parents. It was like other people around. It was such a monumental event that I'm trying to like put my words together here, correctly here. Like, I mean, I feel like what it did was it like, it showed why she like not only took a different name, but like a different identity and a different persona. Mm-hmm. And it was like, she buried that woman, you know, like she, or that girl, I should
totally.
Say, like
she remade herself.
Yeah, exactly. She had to do it so that she wouldn't like go insane with grief.
It was a defense mechanism. Yeah.
That was really cool. Like, and the only thing that I don't like about it, I don't even know if I could say I don't like it. I wish it had been laid on a little more thick a couple books ago. Like
same.
I feel like it's just, it feels a little tacked on, even though it does work. I'm happy about it and I want to dig more into it, but it's just like, I feel like that was information. She feels like too much of a different person earlier that we didn't know, but I think that's kind of the point too.
Right.
So I like it.
It was obviously kind of like recapturing something from her past and her like using, but you know, she's not just going back to being that other person. She's going to use all that she was and learned as Selena to like remake her new self and be bigger and better. I loved all of that. I do kind of think that, I don't know, I feel that sometimes we get information that's like jammed into us about things that have happened in the past that I don't think that Sarah J. Maas intended for that thing to have this purpose in the future. She just added it because she thought it was cool. Such as...
And it fits, but like...
Sometimes, but like Baba Yellow Legs, right? This like witch who's just trying to scratch out an existence as a tarot card reader. But now all of a sudden she's like matron mother of this like Yellow Leg clan, which is like bad name aside. It's just like, I don't like, why would she be a traveling witch like doing readings for people at the fair? Like, it seemed weird, you know?
Well, wasn't she there to meet with the king? Like, wasn't she like just kind of ostensibly doing those kinds of readings? Like,
maybe the king goes to meet with her. But like, we never know why.
I think some stuff, like most stuff definitely fits, but like, I think definitely some stuff, you know, this might be a consequence of like her doing a lot of the first manuscript when she was so young and then maybe not knowing that she wanted to do 8 books and 7 books or whatever. But there are definitely a few things that feel like kind of like puzzle pieces that are just kind of like forced.
Jammed in there.
And like, yeah, it makes a picture for sure. But you can kind of tell like there's some rough edges around it. But like, that doesn't really bug me because I feel like what Maas did, especially with Selena, I feel like the like her character development feels a little bit lopsided in favor of this book. Also, like Maas did it in a way where it really explains a lot more about like just how standoffish she is and just how much of that person she had to bury and how much of that trauma she had to bury. The way that Nehemia was killed in the process of all of that re-traumatized Selena.
Right, triggered that.
Like, even if, let's just say, just to not be charitable at all, like, let's just say that Moss didn't really know what she wanted to do, and then she, like, retroactively, like, kind of retconned everything, was like, ah, this is why she is the way she is, because of, like, all that stuff that I wrote.
That's a good word, retcon, I like that.
A little bit ago, but I don't care, because, like, it totally works. Like, it totally fits.
Yeah.
Fine, you know what I mean?
I agree, and in fact, you know, it's like, yes, I'll mention and complain about it as, like, maybe a funny thing that she gets jammed in there, sometimes not even very skillfully, but, like, is a really cool thing to keep referencing events and characters that have already occurred in the story, because it kind of brings everything home and it doesn't make me as a reader have to learn about a new character and a new person. It doesn't fill my brain with useless information. It makes everybody have meaning and value to the story. Yeah. And pushes the story forward, you know? So I do like her ability to reference the past in the present to help me understand something.
Yeah.
But it is sometimes a good example
for me is like in the beginning of this book, Adian is described as looking like Kale is just like, of course they're related. They look exactly
right,
the
like
same.
Twins.
And it's just funny because like Dorian, you know, it's revealed later that Dorian and Selena had met when they were younger. And Dorian had, it's just like, it seems weird to me that the king wouldn't have been like, oh, you're Adian's cousin, aren't you? Like, there's gold around your eyes and you're like blonde and you look exactly like him. Like, obviously you're alien,
right.
You're alien Galathinius. And I think that what's going on here is like, I think that the story is kind of relying the kind of
arrogance.
It's not
arrogance of the king.
Well, I guess some arrogance on the king's part. I mean, I feel like it's just like there's a certain like implausibility that Aelin is alive. You know what I mean? I think that that's kind of what the story is relying on here, is like everybody being like, oh, she's definitely dead. You know, it's like she's absolutely dead. And it's like, I don't know. You said that Adian looks literally exactly like her, so I mean,
yeah,
like, I don't
and
know.
The king is like
whatever,
brilliant and a step ahead
of seriously
everybody.
Way, yeah.
So it's like, but he can't piece that together.
Like, oh my
like,
god,
come
it's
on,
her.
Kingy.
I thought that was kind of interesting, but you know, whatever, it's fine.
I really like the bad guy of the king.
Yeah.
Actually, I think
he's
a brilliant bad
me.
Guy. I think the fact that we learn so little about him is great, because like mystery is kind of dangerous, you know. And he's always like, gotcha. Like, I just love. Yeah. His brilliance, really, and like how he orchestrated everything at the end to get Aelin to be like, it's me, and then he's like, actually I know it's Sorsha.
Yeah.
So like,
but I got you now too. Yeah,
but yeah, but I got you now too.
Brilliant.
Yeah, he does like quadruple expose, and he gets Dorian, who finally is like, I'm your enemy, king. He's like, dude, how many like innocents do you have to watch this guy slaughter before
you
be
your girlfriend,
you know?
No, not the 500 slaves in these different slave camps and stuff. He's like, oh, you better not do something like that again. And then let me cut in real quick about Dorian, because like this is the worst thought I've had while reading this book so far. Obviously a lot of stuff was going on. It's fine. I'm not saying that this is just what I'm relating to my audience, what I was feeling when I read this part. So just excuse
totally.
Me for a second for being kind of crass. I thought,
live your truth, Evan.
Like when, you know, so Sorsha gets her head cut clean off. And then
man, that rocked me.
We'll come back to that. But then somebody shoots a crossbow at Kale, and Dorian's like, oh, I forgot I could totally freeze everybody in this room. And it's just like, man, you couldn't have done that like 45 seconds earlier.
Like, seriously,
I know that was a horrible thing for me to think. I'm not saying Dorian like dropped the ball or anything, but it's just, I was like, oh, there you are. I know.
High emotions make the magic happen. And so he wouldn't have been able to do it if he wasn't covered literally in her blood. They're like dragging him away, like through her bleeding.
Sure,
you know,
that's a good point. That image is going to stick with me for a while. That is, I didn't think she was going to do it.
Didn't think Sarah had it in her.
I
got some respect for her, honestly.
I was like, she's not going to do it. She's not going to do it. And then she cuts her fucking head off.
Yeah.
And there's just blood all over the place. And he's like crawling through it and screaming. I'm like,
yeah.
Dude, that's where.
Oh. And the king's like, what a scene, dude. What a scene. Like, man, that was rough. I really enjoyed the ending of this book. Like, I really enjoyed this whole book, actually. It was
yeah.
a great showcase of the growth that Sarah J. Maas has experienced, obviously, as an author from the beginning of her debut book to this one. Like, wow, really huge strides.
I would say this is probably my favorite Sarah J. Maas book so far, except Court of Mist and Fury is really cool. Like, I like that book a lot.
I like the first one. a lot. Akatar.
I like the series a lot more than Akatar, though. Like a Straight lot up. More. One thing I'm going to complain about real quick, though, is
I like Selena a lot more than Feyre too.
This is going to be my only time I'm doing this, so everybody that doesn't like it when I do this, here you go. This is the only time. I guess the magic system is just vibes, and that's fine.
Just crying really hard.
It's angry vibes. It's vengeful vibes. It's self-actualized vibes.
Saving friend vibes.
Whatever vibes you want to throw in there, just more. It's fine, and I'm just going to mention it because that's what we do here, and I'm not going to mention it again because I don't think that there's any point. There's no utility in me trying to dig into it. It's just vibes. And so if it gets explained, that's awesome, but I'm not going to, because it doesn't really in Akatar either. It's just it's just in the moment, you just, and so it's whatever. It's fine. It is just a little frustrating sometimes when I am kind of like in the moment in a scene, you know, and it's just like, and she filled herself with magic, and it's just like, okay, I guess, like, I don't know.
I totally agree with you. And I think that almost even beyond that, it's like, there's different types of this magic mm-hmm. within this world, but they're all the same kind of, but like one type is banished in this land, but this other magic, the word keys are like totally still work. The door knocker, it still works, but like, it's definitely a creature of magic.
Yeah, you're right. I think we'll get more info on that. I think,
I hope so.
I think the word keys, like, so when I first started this, I think in the Crown of Midnight, I was like, oh, here we go. We're doing cauldron stuff again. Like, we're doing the grocery shopping trips. I think the word keys are different. I think there's something going on with, like, exactly what they do. It is very interesting that the king, like, Maeve said that the king might have two, which really raises the stakes because the third one, it sounds like, is in Rifthold. So they're
right.
near
it's
each other.
Right
yeah,
there.
So that's definitely sketchy. But, yeah, the magic system... That's probably one of the weaker parts of this for me. It's just, and I think that I'm just going to have to like let it go. And because I'm not even a huge fan of, I mean, I don't demand hard magic systems. I'm fine with soft magic systems and stuff. This one's just totally. Like soft as a kitten, you know what I mean? Like, it's just
beyond. And it has multiple versions of the same soft kind of thing, but they're all different, but not. It's like kind of annoying.
It's fine. I mean, that was why for me, like, the only other part of this book where I was kind of like, take it or leave it, you know, was Rowan and Selena training, you know, because it was just, I think that it was effective in the sense that we got to see a lot of Rowan's character through how much he was kind of like putting Selena through her paces kind of, and really
like punching and biting her.
Yeah, he was like really so much growling, dude.
I thought justified though.
The growling, I was like, dude. Oh my god. Anyway,
the fey bestial thing is like a thing really Sarah J. Maas loves, like the that
his
raw
grace.
Sort of
yeah that lean
the animal
grace, the animal feral grace that he has like I get it
totally, like a tiger, everyone walks like a cat.
That is another funny thing about this book, while we're kind of just jumping around at different points and stuff. And you know what? I almost like appreciate this more because at least what Maas is not doing, which bugs me in a lot of books, is when you make the evil characters ugly. I think that's really annoying. I don't like it when people do that because it's just like,
me too.
Ugly people aren't evil.
And not only that, we shouldn't have that idea in our head because many times evil looks great and can really be tricky, you know?
Yeah, seriously. So I think that one cool thing is, at least I haven't really, it hasn't been like an egregious thing that I've noticed with Maas's stuff or anything, but I have also noticed on the other side of that coin, everybody is beautiful, you know? And
everybody.
So it's just like when Manon is like talking to the spiders and she's like, I don't have anything to trade. And they're like, well, what about your beauty? Because girl, you are so fucking beautiful. And
you are smoking fine.
She's just like, oh, I never really thought much about how pretty I am.
Though to her credit, she never runs out of words or different ways to describe different types of beauty.
Yeah.
You know, like there's, I mean, everyone kind of has that same bestial, like smooth grace to them, but like they're all, there's different ones. Like, and Maeve's like, oh, well, fear me and despair, you know, or love me and despair. Excuse me.
I think something that does just kind of bug me, and it's just like, everybody's just like supermodel hot. Like everybody's lean, you know, and like as a person with a little more girth on him, you know, it's just, I like it sometimes to just like see some like bigger characters sometimes. And I'm not saying that it's this really horrible thing or anything, but it's, I feel like you could do a little bit of variance and just be like, oh yeah, this person was a little bit bigger around the thighs or something, like, you know what I mean? Like, or just had like a broader chest with like thick,
give me a mountain,
something like that. But everybody's just like lean and lithe and like has like this feral grace to them, and it's like they're all handsome, and or they would be handsome, or they were handsome, and like, I don't know. It's like, you know, it's like if I have an average looking, like when Adian walks in at the beginning of the book,
acrobats
like,
everywhere.
Like Adian is like, it's funny because like Dorian in the first book is like the most eligible bachelor in the world. And then, but Kale also is just like this smoldering, grumpy, like amazing looking person. And then
there's the really hot guy who comes in.
And then Adian comes in and he's just like, oh, nobody's seen somebody as hot as me. Yeah. And then, okay, so and I was fine with all that. And then when the Volg shows up and it's just like, oh, and he was so beautiful. And it's like, dude, the Volg, really? Like, are we going to, and I know that they were like stealing people's bodies or whatever, but it's just, it's a thing that I noticed where it was just like, okay, so just everybody's thin and pretty. And it was kind of like that in ACOTAR too, I felt like, where it's just like everybody's thin and pretty. Sure. And I think that, like, again, like, I don't think that it's something that Moss is like, oh, only pretty people are cool. But I think there is this, like, this kind of unconscious, like, this is my fantasy, so everybody's beautiful kind of thing. And it's like, ah, I don't know, whatever. It doesn't really matter
right.
that much.
Yeah, yeah. No, you know, I get you.
That's the thing I noticed.
While we're hitting on things that are like, it's just like, sometimes she says things that sound really cool, but they don't make any sense. Like, and then I get stuck on it.
I didn't have this thought, but I want to hear it. Yeah.
Okay, here's an example. Okay, so we've got the Fae Queen Maeve, who's like, I did not want your parents getting together because the bloodlines were too volatile to be mixed. What? Like, what do you mean they were too volatile? I mean... Are you going to create someone who's going to be like way too cool, beautiful and powerful and good at literally everything? Because like, well, I guess here she is.
I mean, yeah,
you
know? she was right.
She was right. But like, I don't know. It just doesn't make sense to me. Like, now explain the bloodline thing. Are we not supposed to mix?
Yeah, you know, like maybe elaborate a little bit on like why that would be bad. Yeah, maybe. Because yeah. it is a cool sounding line for sure. But
it's a great sounding line. Yeah. But yeah, so sometimes I'm just like, okay, like, I don't permit mortals or half-breeds into my realm. Like, and then they're everywhere. They're all over the place in a realm.
No,
like,
they're, I think Mistwrath or whatever, Mistway.
Oh, right. They weren't at
Durinel. I think it's like right outside Durinel, of Durinel. So that's technically...
You're right. You're right. My bad, sir.
I don't want to say correct because it's not correct. She should let half-breeds into her. So
I
want to... I want to
sound not very inclusive, Miss Moss.
I want to... share another eye roll moment and then we can move on to some other cool stuff and some questions and stuff.
Okay.
So an eye roll moment for me was as much as I loved Rowan, who I think we should talk about Rowan soon. I did roll my eyes just a little bit when Selena first meets Maeve and Maeve is like, oh, I would love to tell you all these things, but first you need to train with this super hot tattooed grumpy warrior Faye. And then Selena's just like, ah, darn it, just my luck. It's just like, okay.
Okay.
I thought
all
it was
right.
just like a little bit contrived. Like Maeve was just like, well, I could totally, we could end this book in a conversation, but first training, totally. Force proximity, you know, so it's fine.
Oh, dude. I had, when she says that, she's like, it could take weeks, like years even. And I was like, dude, come on. You don't even believe that. Like, you will nail it in like 2 weeks. You will fail miserably for a few days and then you'll get more and more frustrated and then you'll break. And then Rome will help calm you down. And somehow this moment will produce like an understanding of like how to use and control your magic.
She's like
it'll be a cakewalk. Don't even worry. And then that exact thing happens. And I'll be like, you'll be great in no time.
I thought it was pretty interesting, Selena's mindset in the beginning of this book. Like, I definitely wasn't really expecting it, I'm happy about it, but I thought it was interesting. But she's just kind of like in this pit of despair, you know?
And totally. This drunken, like, pit of despair and gambling. And
what Nehemia said to her, their last conversation, like, it really fucked Selena up, like, so much. And I think that seeing the aftermath of all of that was pretty interesting.
Totally.
Her kind of being like, wow, this, I made this blood oath, like it was so immature of me and so stupid, like I don't even know what I'm doing, like this is, you know. So I thought like putting her in that position was pretty interesting.
She recovers quickly though.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's like she feels like she needs to though, you know.
Totally. But I would have liked it would have been nice to hear about her like reaching for the glass of wine once she's training or like after a hard day of training and being like, you know what, I don't need this.
I see what you're saying. Yeah.
Yeah, just kind of lock it in for me, you know? While we're talking about Selena and kind of her emotional state at the beginning of this book, maybe you can help me understand. Maybe it's just because she's so bent out of shape about everything and kind of being re-triggered, but she's super sarcastic and not very pleasant to the Fae. And it's like, she's kind of hating on everybody. And it's like, dude, these are like you are in desperate need of some allies right now. And these are like the one people who might actually be able to do it because your family have some family ties here, some history. It's like, why would you like be so aggressive and disagreeable with them? She even hates on herself for what she says to them. Is this just part of her like trauma that she's experiencing and kind of how it expresses itself?
That's kind of how I looked at it. I mean, she's just, okay. I think she's carrying so much guilt with her. She's already in her own mind failed in so many like monumental ways that any confidence that she had before, I feel like she's like kind of projecting and just kind of, you know, I think this is really
fully projecting.
I'm
yeah.
doing an armchair psychologist thing here, but I think that Selena is afraid that the opportunity for her to actually do something is going to present itself. So she's like, you know what I mean? So like, I think
totally
with Rowan, it's like, you know, when there's something you really don't want to do, and then like something happens that kind of like pushes you closer to that thing you don't want to do, and you're just like, I hate that thing.
Totally.
So I think that she was kind of taking out her frustration on Rowan, because in Selena's heart of hearts, like, she knows that, I think she's known this whole book, honestly, that like she is going to eventually have to take up some sort of other mantle, and not even just because of a blood oath, not even just, I think that in her heart, she really does know that there is so much untapped potential that she's aware of. She's just not the kind of person that's ultimately going to ignore that. But I think also why Selena is so complicated is that she really doesn't want to deal with that sometimes. And that's why she's so compelling. It's why she's so compelling sometimes. Because, like, honestly, I can really relate to that feeling of, like, I know this is the right thing to do, but I'm also kind of,
I don't want to
drink and like lay on rooftops and sulk in like my own ineptitude, which I've totally made up in my head.
I can see why the King of Adirlin really hates you guys so much. Like, oh man, you're really hitting below the belt, girl.
That was,
like, wow.
Yeah, that was a pretty rough. But I don't know. I could be wrong about that stuff too. I mean, I feel like maybe it's not that deep, and she's just kind of like in a mood, you know. And it makes sense that she would be considering everything that's happened to her. But I think it might be a healthy mix of both.
Yeah, I get that. I got some questions here for you, if you don't mind.
You're asking me questions, yeah.
Okay, cool. So what is Karanam, if saying that right? It is mentioned with the weird moment between Selena and Rowan when they like, they like mate and meld.
I know what you're talking about.
What the hell?
Okay, so it's not mating. It's not the same thing.
It's not a bond thing.
It is a bond thing.
Okay.
But it's not, fated mates though.
It's
like a, it's like a magic mate.
Okay, it's like a magic power gained with your mate.
Well, because what happens is, because they're not mates. At least I don't think they are. Rowan and Selena, at least so far, I don't think that they are mates. Now, Now, why it's confusing is because they do have
She promises herself to him.
I know, but they're not mates.
And he promises back.
Are they mates?
I don't know, because I have some questions if they are, because she's like, Kale can't be my mate because I was able to scratch him without getting sick. And he's like able to just punch her and bite her and he's fine, you know? Like,
yeah, but I think that she's still,
so maybe he's not.
I think she's still, the vibe that I got from the end of this was not that she was going to Rifthold to let Kale down easy. I think that wouldn't Rowan have to go with her if they were mated?
I don't know either. I don't know if there's any sort of like closeness.
Let's get back to the other
physical
thing real quick though, because specifically the Karanam thing or whatever that's called, Karanam.
Yeah, Karanam.
So they were able to kind of like share abilities and like their wellspring, I guess you could say, of magic power. So it's like a tandem magic power bond. I think there's like a sort of telepathy there, but it's not quite. That was another thing that kind of
like ideas.
That was another thing that was like, I was just like, all right, we're just going with the flow here. When she had like that confrontation with Maeve, and she was like, she opened herself to Maeve and like showed her. It was just like, I don't know what the hell that was.
Yeah. Like, here's my like, memories. Okay. I was like, all right. She just like, innately knows how to do
cool.
that. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I might have missed something in the earlier part of the book, but I was definitely just like, oh, this is the last 40 pages. I'm just here for the ride now. So whatever.
Dude, volatile bloodlines, man.
I have a question. So was there a particular reason the king was choosing this exact moment to attack Wendolyn with these Vogue things? Like, I know that he had kind of been creating this army or these forces, I should say, in the Dead Islands in secret. But it seemed like, was it because Selena had kind of like failed in her mission, or was it just a coincidence that he had, what, does he just like conquest and he's just happened to, his plans just happened to coincide with Selena being there? What was that all about?
I think, yeah, I mean, I think that he got some rumor that Aelin was there, and then he was like, really, all right, sleeper units, go.
But he, you know, America's like, Mortag comes in and he's like, like, everyone's dancing in the streets.
Right.
And then like, it's mentioned the king is upset about it. Cause I think it was like a big shock to him.
You know, I think you're right too, though. The king is
duplicitous.
He's a crafty one. So he could even be faking to his own troops, but I'm not going to like say I'm right.
What if he's known this entire time? Like, what if he's known?
No,
he would have killed
her. Idiot to let her that close and like give her all this power and like send her away to a mission to like her only potential allies. Yeah, you shall be my champion. It's like beginning, dude.
I just got excited.
I just think he was like, it's time to start flexing a little bit. Maybe it's you know, he's obviously an expansionist. Like, we never hear where is he from. What kingdom was he originally king of?
Eiderland. Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's.
I mean, he takes over Eiderlin, but like, where does he come from?
Does he? I thought that Dorian and family were. I thought the Havilards were like a long line of Eiderlanians, Eiderlanzies.
Oh, really? Maybe. I just thought of him as like an usurper in my head, and he like
maybe I missed
from another.
Missed that.
I could have missed that too. I don't know. Okay, how did Murtagh know that Selena had been in a fight with the Vog?
Oh yeah, okay, so that was, I read that page twice because I was like, who was
right.
telling
the fire who, the world hasn't seen since the time of Brandon, like he wasn't there last time I checked.
Yeah, that was weird because he kept saying they. I don't know if he kept saying it, but he said they like a couple times, like they're saying this, and it was like, did he mean like the forces that they fought? Because like, why would they come back and with that news and tell you guys that, and like,
yeah.
It seemed like the news traveled like really quickly. So I mean, at first what I thought what happened was that Selena in her kind of like big boss like magic moment had kind of like alerted most of the world about it or something,
like a magical shout.
Yeah, but like also most of the continent, because they're on a separate continent, I think Wendolyn is not
totally
part of this continent. So, and most of the continent that Eiderlin and all these other places are in, it's like there's like a triangle of no magic that spans pretty much the entire
right.
thing. So it's like, I don't think there's like a magic connection. I wish I could answer that question a little bit more thoroughly, but like that, I think there's just not really that much information. It's just like a story development. Like this is happening right
fast,
now. So yeah, don't worry about it.
Okay.
Yeah, I did think that was kind of odd because it felt like there was like a big kind of like lurch forward in the story where like now everyone knows about this and this is the situation
right.
now. And I was like, oh, okay. Like, sure.
Okay, who at the end of this story knows that Selena is Aelin?
Oh, okay. So in the Discord, everybody, please let us know if we're correct about this. Because
hit me with that. That will help me a bunch.
I am actually kind of having a hard time holding all this together. But I think...
Me too.
So Kael obviously knows. I think
obviously.
Adian knows. I'm
Dorian.
Pretty sure Adian and Dorian know.
I think Adian knew from the get-go.
Ren does not know. I don't think Ren knows.
I agree.
I was surprised that Ren was such a big character at the end of this book, actually. Yeah. Dude, I like the opium den scene. That was awesome. I had to, like,
yeah,
mess
it was, that was
stuff.
Awesome.
That was really cool. Nice touch. Man, so many good scenes
yep.
in this book. One
Dude,
after
really
another.
Was.
Damn.
Okay, there's a thing. I got to hit another thing that I thought was like, okay. There's a scene where Kael, captain of the guard, discovers that two guards who are supposed to be guarding the like main hall are gone. And he gets the other guards to tell on those guards, then he punishes them severely for snitching or for not snitching on their friends. And it's like, okay, but like the thing that keeps, like, you need your men so loyal to the brotherhood of the man next to them in line that they don't break in the battle line, that they actually will sacrifice their life because in order to do so that will save 20,000 of like their brothers. So like it's actually the captain of the guards' place to notice that the guards aren't doing their thing, which he did do, but then he punishes them for like not snitching. It's like, dude, you don't want to instill in your troops this like suspiciousness where you think that everyone's going to be snitching and telling on everybody else. Like that is not a way to get your troops to die for the guy standing next to him, you know,
that.
Which you need.
Yeah.
And then when he finds them, they like leave grumbling the party because they go to party. They like leave grumbling and he's like, I'll deal with you tomorrow. I was like, no, they need to be hanged right now. Cause like you have a, like if like an army since the beginning of time, if you fall asleep on watch, and it, especially if you leave to go party, like, sorry, you get offed right then, because you have to tell the rest of everybody that, like, while they got lucky this time, the enemy could take advantage of that. And not only, because you could be like, man, that's pretty cruel hanging. Like, what about their families? It was like, yeah, but what about the hundreds of families that could have no soldier man returned to them should the enemy take advantage of that moment of, you know, a lapse in guard, you know? So it's like, man, that's a real rough one. So you're just going to give them a firm talking to, and then they get to like, what?
I think I'm going
to
play one of my you're overthinking it cards.
Yeah, no, definitely, for sure. For
you get
sure.
One of those per episode, and okay. I'm playing mine yeah, right
I
now.
Won't read you the paragraph that I wrote out about the psychology of troop movement.
Speaking of Kale, though, I mean, I like where you're kind of going with this. I think it's pretty interesting. I mean, I think one of the reasons I thought Kale was a lot more interesting in this book than the other ones, I guess he was pretty interesting in Crown of Midnight. Anyway, him kind of, his whole dilemma with this, with like what side he was on and stuff. So I've got a couple thoughts about it. One of them is that I thought it was like pretty obvious, like what side he was eventually going to choose. You know what
yeah,
I mean? Like, yeah. But I liked what,
like,
the,
I'm on yours. Don't
see,
like,
just,
yeah,
because,
no kidding,
just because
dude.
I can predict where it's going doesn't mean I don't like reading about the process. So that's why I think like Kale was,
ooh,
like, yeah, Kale was like pretty interesting, especially because, and this really feeds into the other thought that I had about Adian too, because Moss duped me. I thought Adian was going to be a shithead. Like, I really thought we were in for like another horrible kind of like stand-in clever smile feral grin character, which, don't get me wrong, he is, like, he absolutely
right,
but like there's a lot more edges to Adian that I really want to explore in more books. I really like Adian a lot.
Keyword edge, because he saved the sword. Nice.
I really wish we would have got a little bit more of him, but this book couldn't be like 900 pages, but I guess other ones can. But like, yeah, Adian, I really liked him. I liked the dynamics between, like, I thought it was just really well set up that, you know, Kale just didn't really like Adian, and him meeting it with him publicly, like, would be very suspicious, and it kind of is suspicious later. Adian's kind of like standoffish, but also pretty cool with Kale in a way that his friends aren't. So I just, the whole dynamic like really worked.
It was weird that it was suspicious though, because the king tries to get them to hang out more and become friends.
Yeah,
he's like, you're hanging out
Kale's
with him all day.
Volition though is kind of weird, you know.
Okay, yeah, true, because like he did trip him into a rose bush, which was not cool.
I was totally, dude, I was really taken for a ride there though. I mean, I really thought that, and then I was pleasantly surprised when we find out that no, Adian is very loyal to Terrasen, and it's actually been eating him up that he's had to do this whole song and dance, and he actually suspected this creepy ring that they here's this solid black ring, like, no.
I love the ring, and he throws it at the king's feet. He's like, this is a fake, and the king's like, yeah, I was actually kind of wondering why it didn't work at all, like,
way to cover your tracks.
The king
Bob.
Is both brilliant and kind of an yeah. idiot all at the same time.
Okay, so I think I want to talk about one more character. I think we've covered, I think we're actually, we got to talk about two more characters. So,
okay.
And then we're going to move on to predictions. Then we should wrap this up, because we've been at this for a little while here.
I might sidetrack us a few
that's,
times between
now
totally and then,
cool.
But hey, you know, who knows?
All right. So we should talk about Rowan. What do you think about Rowan? I thought he was pretty cool, honestly.
I not only loved Rowan, I loved Rowan's group of homies, like his friend group of like, they got all the little animal pack. Yeah. We needed kind of like a pack of soldiers that have been fighting in battles since like they were kids and trained together, and they're all like super hyper loyal to each other, and the fact that they can all turn into super awesome animals is just even cooler.
Did I read that wrong? Like, weren't they about to attack him in the confrontation with Maeve? Because they're all like sworn to Maeve as well, aren't they?
Yeah, but only because Maeve can control
sure, okay.
them. Like, they have to, they
okay.
have to do it, she says. I'm sure inside they were like, no. Though it's weird because Rowan defies it at one point. He like is able to like through the power of love, but like his friends can't when it comes to like, no, I'll have them kill you. Actually,
they're not main characters.
That's true. That's true. But like Gabriel, that's what his name,
Gabriel.
Right? The golden. Yeah, I liked him a lot. I liked all of their friend group. I like the, I don't know. It's always nice to have a very solid group of stalwart warriors that you can bring into the fray. You know,
yeah,
it's good to have that in the back pocket. And can kill to have like to throw weight to a scene, you know.
It's funny, I went through a little bit of this on audiobook, and the narrator for Gabriel switched to a British accent, but like nobody else in the book has a British accent. I was just like, that's an odd choice, like whatever, not doesn't matter at all, it has nothing to do with anything, but I was just listening to it and I was like, oh, whoa, what, I didn't even know you could do a British accent.
The audiobook reader gets a little, I don't know. I've listened to a little bit myself too, but she's not my favorite.
I prefer reading it personally. Yeah.
Me too. She gives everyone a really sarcastic tone to their voice. And sometimes I'm like, this is a really serious conversation. I don't think that person's being sarcastic or snarky right now. But she kind of just adds that and it kind of throws me off sometimes and makes me dislike people sometimes. So I like to read it.
Oh, let's get back on track to Rowan. Okay. So Rowan.
Oh yeah. I loved Rowan.
Yeah. I really liked him. I really liked how he kind of, I feel like he was the person that Selena needed at the time, you know, because totally. He was definitely just like, oh, you're a big, bad assassin, aren't you? Like, oh, you did some really dangerous jobs, haven't you? And I just really liked it because Selena in that moment, I feel like really wasn't, she was in a place where I feel like coddling her or honestly, even like validating her right away probably wouldn't have really worked that well. Like
she wouldn't have respected him.
I mean, I don't even know if it's like a respect thing. I think it's just, I mean, you might be right, but I think what it was that Rowan was kind of like, the only way that you're going to be able to get to the level that you need to get to with these magic powers is if you're pushed past a certain point.
Work in the kitchens. Wait.
That was a lot of kitchen duty. But I don't know. It just seemed like Rowan was very aware. He seemed to be able to like gauge Selena's personality pretty quickly and kind of like call her out and kind of, I don't know. I just thought it was like necessary and it was nice because I'm not saying that like, Kaol and Dorian like totally show their bellies, but they like kind of totally show their bellies.
Yeah, they're so in love with her.
I know, it's like as soon as they meet her, they're just like, oh, she's the most beautiful person I've ever seen in my entire life. I'm gonna shower her in dogs and chocolates, you know. And so
you're so good at the piano, wow.
But like, Kaol at first is pretty grumpy, but anyway, I digress. I feel like Rowan was just like an outstanding addition to this cast. I want to see much, much more of him. I think that he also like served as a very useful conduit for world building and info dumping and in a way totally. That I was really comfortable with and wanted. I was like eager to know more about it because what a great way to explain the world to your reader. Like what better way than somebody who's lived in this world for thousands of years? Like I'm fine with that. It totally makes sense that right. He would know a bunch of this stuff. And actually to go a little bit further, it makes sense that he would be willing to talk about a lot of this stuff after a while because Rowan is hurting. He's hurting really bad, you know, and I really liked exploring that too. And I feel like he found in Selena, what I appreciate so far is the platonic relationship they seem to have. I don't know if that's going to stay platonic.
You think it's platonic?
I think it is for now. Like
I never felt it was platonic.
I think it's pretty platonic.
He's like biting her and they have some weird like sexual tension kind of. And then they're like, I don't know. He gets super like aggressively protective.
Dude, like fucking man. But like brooms have sexual tension in these books. Like
that's true. Like, that's true. Everything's alive.
So,
yeah.
I mean, I think.
Slender. Brooms have sexual tension. That's so funny.
I always appreciate platonic relationships in books.
Me too.
Like, I just think it's cool. It's nice to see every now and then, and it really helps with like the anticipation, you know, because it's like now I don't really know what's going on with them. But if it was like too heavy handed, too fast, I'd be like, oh well, eventually they're gonna hook up. But I mean, I think Selena and Rowan are probably eventually gonna hook up.
I mean, man, I definitely think it's in the works. I mean, they're. Yeah, the one thing I did find a little bit, and you even wrote it, so Evan kind of reworked the recap and did a great job adding some delicious little details to it, and I could see totally like his just fun little personality put right into the recap when you mentioned that after he gets freed from his blood oath, he immediately turns and promises, like, this guy cannot just, like, he's not used to freedom and wants nothing to do with it.
Take a trip or something, man. Yeah,
like... take a trip or something, dude. He's just like, and I'm free, and now I'm promising myself to somebody else.
Like, go see a movie by yourself, man. Like, take a couple weeks.
Download Tinder. Like, it's fine, dude. Oh my gosh, that's so funny. I loved Rowan's ability to add to the world. I didn't love Manon's ability to add to the world. And we get this occasionally with Sarah J. Maas, which is, I just think it's kind of lazy and clunky, where she'll introduce a new character or tribe or new thing that we need to know about. And then that person will have a conversation with themselves, which is totally fine in their head. But as they're doing so, they will explain to themselves what things that they know are already. Like, if I'm thinking to myself and I think about a car, I don't explain what a car is to myself because I know. And Manon does this for like 3 pages about the tribes. It's really useful. And I mean, we end that by being like, I know all about the tribes. That's great. But it just seems kind of a weird way to deliver it and kind of lazy, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, like, that's something that I've always struggled with as a writer. I mean, it's like, how much am I supposed to just, like, tell? Like, what can I just do for
mental
the...
mental vomit?
Well, and, like, I mean, it's for the reader's benefit, obviously. Like, if a character already knows something and they're thinking it, then, I mean, there's only, you know, you can, like, have something remind them of something or whatever. And, like, there's, like,
right,
you don't want to necessarily just, like, dump it on the reader. But, like, I mean... I've seen a lot of authors do it, especially if their books are like really heavy on the world building, where it's just kind of like, the reader just kind of has to know this stuff. And like, I don't want to do it through dialogue and like clever showing, overtelling like scenes and sequences
it's
and stuff.
Efficient.
Like, it's very efficient. And honestly, like as I've been kind of writing myself and kind of like putting these kinds of stories together and stuff, I think it's cool to just, I think that there's a rule that I think a lot of writers take like way too seriously sometimes. And it's the never tell, always show, you know, show don't tell, show don't tell, show don't tell. And it's like
totally
it's, you know, it's a
we've sang that card ourselves.
It's more of a guideline,
the pirate code.
it's just like you know what I've noticed too, and I don't want to turn this episode into a writing class or whatever, but it's just like I've noticed that if you're trying to advance some time, yeah, say what's going on. You know what I mean? Like, if you're trying to talk about something that had happened in the past, it's like related to something that's
right.
happened
100 years past, and the blah blah blah
you
happened.
Can totally
blah, blah,
do
blah,
it
yeah.
sometimes. Like, you can like you don't have to like come up with this incredibly clever way of showing stuff all the time. Definitely try to do it a lot, because you don't want to spoon feed everything to the reader. You know, because readers want to feel like they
won't value the information.
Yeah, they want to feel like they're putting stuff together and like they're here for a reason and,
yeah,
and stuff. But like also. I definitely don't mind it, and what I do mind though, kind of like with what you were talking about, is like if it's like 3 pages between action beats, then it's like, where were we again? Like, what's going on? We're like 4 steps removed from what's actually happening in this chapter. So yeah,
like I prefer obviously to be shown, but like you can be told some things, and in fact the voice of the book has like the book has a voice. There is a character telling you the story, and that's okay to have that person give you some information. What I don't like is it takes me out of the story when this person is explaining to themselves what the car is in their brain. It's like, that's just not how people think. And that just makes me think like, that's so obviously there for my like help as a reader. You know, it's just like, it just draws me out of the story because it's like not real. People don't think like that though. Like I said, it's efficient and very helpful. And I needed to know all that
stuff.
Yeah,
a lot of information is being given to us, especially with the Manon chapters who, we had never even heard. We'd heard of like the Iron Cloud Witches or whatever they're called. You know, we'd seen like one of them, but we really didn't know much about what was going on here. So with all these new characters being introduced, I did very much appreciate it. Last thing I want to talk about, and then we can do a little bit of predictions and then wrap up. Let's talk about Dorian and Sorsha.
Oh, yeah.
Which, man, yeah, like we...
I kind of loved
it. Yeah, I mean, I liked it a lot. I wasn't... Were you expecting it? To blossom into a romance like that?
Oh, from the moment that she was like, I have such a crush on him, and she was, and he's like, I don't even know her name. I was like, they're getting together. for sure.
I don't know. I didn't see it.
Caught you unawares, huh?
Yeah, I mean, I just didn't. I was really happy about it though, because it was just like, hey, like Dorian, hey, you know, you really aren't hung up on Celaena. Like, it's nice to see that. You know,
totally.
It's cool to see that he's. I just really appreciate how much depth Dorian has when he's barely been in these books, you know, like it really shows. I mean, first of all, dude is just a class act. Like he's very cool. He's really
a
nice
great
dude.
Guy.
But also
he's always said that he's like a player. He's like went through a lot of the women, but I don't see it.
I don't know. I've never really seen it. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, he's like not really a playboy.
Yeah. I mean, he meets this girl and he's just like, I really like you.
He's super respectful. He's like, are you ready? She's like, no. And he's like, totally fine. Take your time. Like it's,
yeah, I feel like maybe Moss was like, let's turn him into a playboy. And then he's such a golden retriever. She was like, nah, let's just keep him that
totally.
Way. You know, like, let's just keep him.
Yeah.
And I appreciate
it. I love Dorian.
Yeah, I think Dorian's really
me
great.
Too.
I don't really have much else to say about it. I mean, I think that Sorsha was cool. I mean, I liked their chapters together where they were trying to figure out how. Yeah. I just really liked those scenes a lot. I mean, I just want more Dorian, honestly. Like, it's really sad how it ended
and
up for him.
Fortunately, we don't get more Sorsha.
Dude.
Like that really hit me, man. It was rare that these books
that
get
happened.
Me emotional, and it was the saving of Manon saving her friend, and that
epic.
Like the wyvern just like dying, crashing into the ground. Man, that was rough. And then Sorsha just getting her head chopped off in front of everybody. Man, I just such a surprise. Like, it's a pleasant surprise because I like an author who has balls, no, you know,
like,
but like,
too,
man,
yeah.
I'm kind of sad too.
Follow through on it, man. I like that kind of stuff. I think it's great.
Yeah.
But also sometimes it's just like, okay, that guy is crawling through blood and screaming like, woo, like, this is a young adult series, dude. It's like in Six of Crows when Kaz rips that dude's eyeball out. It's just like, holy shit. Like, this is crazy.
Oh, wow. Not young adult. Okay. Which, you know, I'm not a young adult and I kind of prefer to read crawling through the blood of his lover. And man, it's going to be fuel for him for the rest of the series.
So as we wrap up here, when I posted that video to TikTok, it was really cool because I got a lot of pushback for some of the things that I had said. Chief among those was the mention of Selena's tone and like how she's a murderer and she eats chocolates and stuff. And she's like, it was kind of a bad example of like her eating chocolates, but just, you know what I'm saying?
The
like,
piano yeah, thing. Like, yeah. Like a lot of exactly what you're saying.
But I think that the take that I saw, and I wanted to kind of like tell everybody about this because it really resonated with me, and I appreciate people going onto my videos and telling me that I'm wrong about stuff, or at least giving me takes that make me change my mind about things. Because with Selena, the way that this had been explained to me was that, like, Selena doesn't want to be a murderer. Like, Selena's
like, very clearly,
like Selena wants to, like, it's okay for her to be the girly girl on top of that too, because she doesn't want this lifestyle isn't something that she relishes. You know, she relishes how adept she is at it, but she doesn't necessarily like it. And I think that, like, her trying to, like, tap into, and now especially with, like, knowing much more about her backstory here with this book, it's like her trying to tap into those kinds of, like, luxuries and, like, those kind of, like, nobility type things, it makes a lot more sense now. So I just want to, like, shout that out, that I appreciate people saying those kinds of things in my videos and just kind of saying, like, hey, I appreciate your input on that, but, like, you're kind of wrong about this. Like, that's awesome. You can totally do that in Discord too, because like I also said in that video, Chad and I aren't the target demographic for these books. I mean, we're men in our 30s, but man, I'm having a blast. I'm so on board for this series now, man.
I was never bored
for this book. Hell no.
Yeah. Not even
and apparently
a little bit.
They just keep getting better, and that's the other thing that I wanted to mention that a lot of people were saying in that video that I made, is that not only do the books keep getting better, but to kind of our earlier point about the YA-ness of the series, apparently they're much like the Harry Potter books, where they're getting a lot more adult as they go. Somebody actually compared Heir of Fire to Goblet of Fire, where it's kind of like a turning.
Actually, a pretty good comparison.
Yeah, it's like halfway through the series. It kind of makes a lot of sense. And it's like a turning point where it's like, okay, so the first three books are like, we're going to eat pumpkin pasties and we're going to solve who the big monster in the basement is. You know, like
pumpkin pasties. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And like everyone's going to get brooms and
snogging. Yeah. Disgusting.
Okay, yeah, everybody drinks butterbeer and everything's fine. And then, fucking Wizard Hitler comes back and it's just like, it's really bad, you know, and it just keeps getting darker
totally.
As we go. And I think that for at least from what other people were saying about these books, they seem to get darker and just more complex, which I'm so here for. I'm so stoked about it. Let's move on to predictions and then roll on out of here if you're cool with that.
Okay, before we do that, I got a few things I want to throw out there. I think I'm so smooth,
but I forget I'm talking to another human being.
A few things I just want to say real fast is I loved the tattooing of a way to, like, remember the physical
cool
representation of accepting the past and remembering those lost in, like, a healthy way instead of just, like, wallowing in it, you know? It was, like, a really cool way of being, like, I'm going to move on, but I'm not going to forget the sacrifice that you guys made, nor will I have it be for nothing, you know? As opposed to this, like, wallowing in the loss. You know, I really loved that. Darrow could really take a page out of the tattooing book, and that would be a really great idea thing for him to do to help him get over his guilt.
I don't know, could Darrow tattoo like 10 million dames on his back?
I don't know, dude, and his skin is probably too hard. Oh, yeah, dude. Just break the needle.
Selena,
you know,
got tattooed at the end of this too. Forgot about that.
Totally. Yeah, totally. I thought it was really cool. I did not see Maeve kind of being bad coming at all. It just really hit
me
out of nowhere. I guess it like on reflection, it shouldn't, because she like didn't help some people who were like, we need your help. But she was like, nah, it's fine. You can be taken over. And then she was actually had her guards.
Stop.
Yeah, no, don't. She had her guards who was like only loyal to her because she had like a blood magic or blood oaths, you know? So it's like, I get
time,
it, but
yeah.
I still was surprised.
Not into Maeve.
I thought she was going to be an ally.
Nah, dude, she sucks. Like the whole time I was like, yeah, I'm not into this. Like, at all.
Really? Yeah. Oh man, I thought she was gonna like be cool and kind of be like a
no,
there, shoulder to lean on.
No,
even.
Dude, wasn't there like a moment where or a mention of like Selena's parents were like worried that Maeve was gonna like come after them and like or at least come after Selena for some reason, and there was like just some sketchy like bad blood between everybody.
Selena was rejecting her Fae side so hard that I was like, it can't be anything but good, you know, because she always like rejects the things that make her grow, you know. And so, but again, there's which is nice to have a little bit of nuance. We don't have all good, all bad, you know, though sometimes we have like the Volg who like lose their fight against Selena because they're too busy enjoying being evil and like making her relive all of her life's terrible moments, just like drinking that in, you know, like don't monologue, don't be evil for evil's sake. That's how you get dead.
I was watching The Dark Crystal, Age of Resistance. There's like a part, and it's kind of like what I was talking about the last episode of the Monday episode, where it's like they're puppets, so you got to kind of like get creative with how you're going to block all these fight scenes and stuff. And I just noticed it happened in that episode, and it happens in like TV shows and movies and video games and books and stuff, where like the main character will be fighting the antagonist. The antagonist has a sword, a big sharp knife that can kill people, and then just... they just hit them in the face, you know, because they're the main character. So like, you can't like, and it just always bugs me.
Sometimes they even take the dagger and like in his hand and overpower their arm and get him to stab themselves a bunch. It's like, wow, that's not how arms work.
Yeah, or like, you know, you've got a perfectly good sword and then you like hit them with the pommel of your sword and like punch them or something. And it's just like,
totally.
You could have.
You'd be being
like the whole motion you just did. Like, we could have ended this like right here. But anyway, that's so off topic. Doesn't matter. The last thing that I want to talk about real quick is what I think that this book is about and what I think that Moss was trying to communicate to us about the main character. And that was Selena's kind of transformation, her arc totally. That she had that I think that had been a long time coming, where she kind of like, I feel like what I got out of it is that she was kind of like accepting the guilt and accepting that the things that she has done on their face reprehensible, and she needs to like really move forward with that knowledge and also not let how horrible those things were dictate the way that she moves forward. And you know what I mean? Like, she needs a path to betterment,
right?
Like,
she can't go back.
No, she can't go back. She can't regress. She has to clear a path for herself, you know, and she's right. The only one that's going to be able to do that. You know, so I thought totally. I just want to like mention that, shout that out. That was very clear to me. And I really thought it was done really gracefully, really well.
And not only that, but it's a powerful theme because how many times in life do you wish that, you know, after you made a mistake or a series of mistakes, do you wish to be the person that you were? Like, I wish I could go back and be who I was and have the world be the way it was, my life be the way it was prior to these mistakes that I made. And you can't do it. Like, you know, too much. Kind of some innocence is lost. You can't put it back in the bag, but you can go forward with a heightened level of empathy towards people who have made similar mistakes. Like, there's a lot of good that can come out about it. It can actually make you a stronger person. But man, I really resonate with like the man, I wish you could go back in time, but like, you can't do that. So I think it's a really powerful theme.
Yeah, I remember a good example of that, and I'm sure a lot of people listening can relate to this too, but my first like really intense, serious relationship ended in an intense, serious breakup. And it was for all kinds of reasons, as they are. But I remember thinking, and I think I even told her this too, but I remember thinking, I'm eventually going to be the person that would have been able to be the right person for this relationship.
Ooh.
You know what I mean? Like, exactly, but like, I will eventually learn the lessons that I didn't learn in time for this relationship. And obviously relationships are a two-way thing. I'm not saying they're not, but it was a very interesting thought because it was like, it won't work that way. It doesn't, you know, it's like trying to, it's like those those bee traps, you know, that can only go one way in, you know? So, but what you can do though, is you can try to be better in the next relationship.
Right.
You can learn from those mistakes.
Right, the next time.
And you can do the things that you know you couldn't do. And then there is a certain kind of like bitterness in there, right? Like, where it's like,
there's a grieving. You lose. You have to grieve.
And I think that was what was really tripping Selena up in this book. And it was very cool to see the way that she kind of came over that. So yeah, I mean, again, I think it was very gracefully done. I applaud Moss's
beautifully done with that last line, honoring Sam. It like ties everything that you're talking about back into. It's like, she's honoring who she is and acknowledging the hell that she had to go through. She realized that the only way out is through.
Yeah, that's like exactly what we're saying in one sense.
I have too many real enemies to have myself be one of them, you know?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I just thought the ending was very, very powerful. I do have to laugh sometimes when the grandma of the, like, the witch is like, what can we give you for the glory your coven of wyvern riders will bring to the clansman? And it's like, I don't know, you could stop, like, beating the absolute crap out of me every time I show, like, any amount of humanity. And then final thing I want to say that's just kind of, like, me pecking at this book a little bit, because, you know, I did just give it a ton of praise as far as powerful themes and this great growth. Man, Sarah J. Maas's names super suck. We've got the blade, the wind cleaver. Yeah. We've got the, like, it's just basic fantasy. Like, it's like the Rune Mountains, the Scallywag Bay, or like the Skull Isles that we had in the last book for the pirates or something. Like, it's just like, Skull oh my Bay. Gosh, you know, it's like, it's not. Yeah, it's just like, we got the Fire Heart, you know, is what her mom called her because she had fire power. It's like, man, her names just aren't very good.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like it's funny because like a lot of them, like Rowan, like, yeah.
Oh, that's
like, yeah, that works, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Manon, I don't know why, but that totally, Abraxas, like that, all of that works.
Yeah, yeah, Abraxas is cool. Yeah, it even sounds dragon.
Yeah, but then, yeah, there's definitely some where it's like, I get Aelin and Adian. That's fine.
Man, the A names.
There's
okay.
A lot of A names. Yeah.
Even ones that could be E's, they're A's. And you're like, man, oh. Which brings me to Arabin. What the heck is he doing this whole time? He's just ghosted.
He allegedly has one of the word keys in the form of Selena's necklace or whatever.
But that's like the first time we hear of him. You'd think she would be like,
I think we're going to find out.
Trying to find him.
Yeah, because she goes back. So that's a very cool transition into predictions. And then let's wrap it up.
Yeah, because she's going back to face her past. Yeah. Okay, so maybe it's appropriate. So, okay, that makes a lot of sense to me. Yep, that was good.
So I think that... Personally, I think that one of the issues in this next book is probably going to be Kael still in Rifthold when Selena gets there, and just whatever weird gray zone they're in. You know, like there's a lot more going on now. A lot more has come to light. So I'm kind of curious to see that. I hope it doesn't hang its hat too hard on that, though, because there's so many other things.
It won't.
I mean, that's if it's even a thing, and I don't even know if it's going to be a thing.
This is why I have that opinion, because Kael even says, he has like a conversation with himself where he's like, man, I don't think I'll ever get over Selena. Yeah. And he's like, but Selena Sardothian doesn't exist anymore. It will be Aelin Ash River Galathinius who will be returning, and she's not in love with me that way. And so he kind of like, he begins the road of his mental healing and how he can get over it right now.
Yeah, but there's like saying it and then there's like feeling it when she's there.
Oh,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like I'm totally not going to go over to her house at 2 a.m.
Yeah, but then he's looking in her eyes like, yeah.
You'll take her to Taco Bell.
You're not wrong. You're not wrong. But I think that it won't be a huge thing.
Yeah, so I think that that'll be interesting. I hope Selena like guts this Arabin guy. It would just be so cool to see Arabin just like not be part of this story anymore. I'm not usually a big fan of like,
she needs a win.
Personally, I as a reader, as a writer, vengeance is a weird thing. You know what I mean? Like, I do think that it's very appropriate considering what's happened between them. I think Arabin has gotta go. Like I rarely say that kind of thing, but I think that a showdown between Selena and Arabin's got it coming, especially considering what happened with Sam and stuff. So I would like to see that.
I hope it comes about in a way that's like almost like in passing, though. Like, she doesn't seek it out. She gets the opportunity to, and knows that he's got some like devious plans, and she does it to stop those plans, not to get revenge, you know, because like, he's not worth her revenge. Don't give him the power anymore, you know, like he's trash.
Dude, seriously. Yeah. Oh my god. Yeah. So yeah, more Dorian would be great. If he's in some, I hope he's not in a collar for the whole book. Please don't do that. Like, he's too good. He's too good to keep in a collar for the whole book. I realize it's a plot point, but like, just get him out of there quickly, please. So that'd be Rowan better come back. Dude, Rowan's gotta be, wasn't there like a hawk flying over the ship when they were,
yeah,
is that Rowan?
I don't really, I think so.
Like,
and I think
owl.
He's just going to choose to be
that?
In hawk form like the entire time, because that's why he can't come back, right? It's because it's either Fey or,
dude, maybe he is her fucking mate. Like, he couldn't stay away.
Dude, oh, he's definitely her mate, though. I think he might die, honestly, before the end of this. I think that he might die, dude. I think he might die.
I think
I don't know.
I think Kael's gonna die.
Really?
Dude, that guy is so sword happy, man. Like, he's gonna get...
No way, dude. He threw a sword into the river at the end of this.
A sword? Yeah.
I know what you're saying.
He kept,
you're like, that's not what I meant, one. Chad.
No. Kale, I think Kale's not long for this world. Dorian, I think, will survive. Dorian...
Who is Dorian while we're on him? He's obviously not the son.
Dude, for a second, like, I was like, God damn it, Chad.
Yeah. No, like, dude, are you serious? Like, your brain can't be this dumb. Like, did you actually read these books? No. Oh man, that's unfortunate that you would even think that of me. But no, like, who is he for real? Like, what's his backstory?
Yeah,
you know?
I don't think he's definitely not the king's son. There's no way.
Totally. I wonder if we'll get like a Luke and Leia situation where it turns out to be like her like brother or something. You know, it's like, that's weird. Good thing they almost didn't really, you know.
No, because he would be like, he'd be blonde and have like gold tinged eyes.
Totally reflect eyes. Yeah. What is it with gold eyes being important, right? Because Manon has solid gold eyes, which is a really cool mental, by the way.
I don't know.
Like, image.
Maybe it'll. Yeah, eyes are a thing. I don't really have very many more predictions, though. I mean, I think I would be pretty disappointed to have the king be the ultimate big bad for this entire series, but also not that disappointed because he seems like there's a lot more going on with him than we know about, too. So, but it'd be so cool if there was like some like kind of like big like
demon lord controlling
like kind of thing, like, you know what
okay.
I mean?
I think the king is an agent of whatever is on the other side of the gates.
Yeah, that's what I'm
of the
saying. Yeah, totally.
Yeah, and he's like either being working for the evils for evil's sake, or he's being controlled. What I would love this if the king comes about to be like, turns out he's just been mind controlled this whole time, and he's like crying inside when he orders Sorcerer's death and stuff. You know, kind of has a Darth Vader moment.
Totally.
I think that would be really cool. Right at the end, I mean, he's obviously got to die, but like. It would be cool to see that, you know?
I didn't even think about that. That'd be crazy.
Yeah, right? And, like, maybe Dorian is his son, but, like, he mated with some Fae, and he actually had, like, this tragic love story in his past or something. I think that would be pretty cool.
I don't know, man. Let's go read. Let's go figure out.
Okay, let's go
out.
Read, yeah. Man. And for one of the first times in this series, and not that I didn't like the past books, I'm just reading a lot of really good books right now. Yeah, dude, and I'm reading Combat Codes. Yeah. Like, wow. So for one of the first times in this series, I'm like legitimately stoked to go read more of this series because it's like I'm very stoked. Yeah, she's won me over. I discovered like a set of brass balls that she possesses that I didn't know she had, and like wow, I'm just really really pleased.
Yeah. I mean, I think that you know the first three books, I liked Crown of Midnight. I'm not gonna lie, I think Crown of Midnight was pretty strong, but yeah, definitely the order that we read them in was just kind of like tedious, I feel like, you know, because we got off the ground with Throne of Glass. It was like okay, it was pretty middle of the road book, and then Crown of Midnight I was like, hey, look at this is kind of getting interesting, and then Assassin's Blade, while it was interesting, felt like a regression, and I think that was
totally,
and it's funny, you know, there's a lot of
that's like our bad though.
I started a lot of discourse on that video that I put up, and yeah, a lot of people were like, you were a fool to read Assassin's Blade third. Like, you should have read it first. And then a lot of people were like,
they were right. We listened to Moss, though.
I don't think there's like a, yeah. But anyway, that's going to do it for us today, everybody. Thank you so much for listening to this episode. We do have a Discord. And if you want to go into the Discord and correct anything Chad and I said,
tell us how wrong
we
are.
If we're wrong about stuff, you can give us a pronunciation guide. I think we did okay, though, you know, for pronunciation.
I think so.
But, yeah, hit us up in the Discord if you have any questions or any concerns or anything you'd like us to call out for the next episode and say we were wrong about, because we will do those kinds of editorials for the next episode if we see them in there. But until next week.
You know who survived? Fleetfoot. He's still around, still man. He got saved. Man, he's fleet of foot, and Kale got him.
Until the next time we all hang out, everybody, for the Throne of Glass people out there, which will be next week when we do Queen of Shadows. I think Queen of Shadows is going to be our last book where we do one episode.
Because they start getting pretty
thick. We can tackle this one in one episode, I think. It'll be a longer one, kind of like this one, but we can do Queen of Shadows in one episode. So here's the big thing. If you're still with us here, your input is welcome. I have been kind of oscillating between what we're going to do. So there's a tandem read for books 5 and 6. So we're about to read book 4. And in books 5 and 6, apparently there's an order where you read both the books at the same time. So you read like that a couple chapters from one book and you read a couple chapters from the other book, because apparently they take place at the same time.
Huh.
So my initial thought on it was, we shouldn't do that because it would be a nightmare. It would be like a...
That's my knee-jerk.
It would be like such a complicated episode. It would be really rough to recap it. It'd be really difficult.
Totally.
But also...
Might be a way to break it up into smaller edible chunks.
It might be also, though, a pretty cool episode. What I was thinking is, and I might do like a tag everybody post and see what everybody thinks about this. I think what might work is if you and me took a couple weeks to do it and we did record a 4-hour episode, but I think it would be a rough episode. Like it'd be hard to record.
Right.
I'm already tired doing this episode. We had a lot to talk about. So I don't want to get anybody's hopes up. What Chad and I will probably end up doing is not doing the tandem read purely because the episode would be a lot of work. Like it would just be
just like the organization.
It would be too much. Like it'd be really rough to write the recap. It'd be really.
But I do want to stew on it now that you've presented
the
idea.
Everybody, let us know in the Discord if you think it's something that we like have to do. We might consider it a little bit more.
Yeah, please let us know. Okay, I have one prediction that hit me that I'm not going to be able to end this episode without saying. I think Dorian is like part demon.
Whoa.
That's where his magic is coming from because he's too perfect, right? He has no internal problems. And if he learns he's like part demon creature, he's going to have such a struggle to overcome. I think we're about to enter some really dark days for Dorian.
Please, no.
Dark days for Dorian, unfortunately.
Well, until then, everybody.
That's it. Right,
we're done. That's the end of the episode right there. Okay, good episode. Everybody, thank you so much for listening. Seriously, thank you so much for joining us on the Throne of Glass train, the boat, the caravan,
the wagon, the wyvern.
Thank you, everybody. Until next time, hope you all have an amazing rest of your day. And of course, happy reading.
Bye, everybody.